Meeting guidelines for WebEx. Megan, is that kind of something you were going to discuss with the group?
The guidelines that I have are, will just encourage folks to keep their mics muted unless they're speaking. That just creates a easier understanding, not competing with one another. Galena, is there anything that you would like to add to that?
No, just I don't know if you want to talk about the public comment now, just so folks know what to prepare for or later, and the rules of engagement. Yeah, if you could be muted until it's your turn. And then Megan and I are also looking at chat. The chat is a very good way to ask a question.
Public comment, we are asking folks to submit their statements to be read during public comment to the PAB email. That email address is in the chat. I'm putting it there now.
Did we have any, go ahead.
We have one, we have one email that has come in with the request to be read during public comment. I have the email before me. And I will bring it up on the screen as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great. And if you could just go ahead and read it for us who have that screen minimized so we can see people's faces, that'd be great.
Okay. You want that now?
Please.
Can you see that, Kelsey?
So I can't figure out how to make it bigger on my screen and not see other people's faces.
This is a learning curve for me too.
Yeah. But we get the general gist. If you just want to read it, if you can see it easily, I think that would be the easiest.
Sure. Says, to whom it may concern, I have lived directly behind H.B. Fuller for 11 years. I apologize. My family has enjoyed the park immensely. We have taken the time to pick up garbage in the woods to the west along the walking trails many times. We recently pulling 5 large garbage bags worth of litter out of the woods. At H.B. Fuller, Salmon Creek Soccer had left a large steel goal behind in the field or in the west field after moving out. My children and I had used that goal many times to get some fitness in. On June 16th, while playing soccer with my son and 2 friends, a maintenance worker with Hazeldale Little League approached me and told me I could not play soccer there. I said it was a park and would continue to play. The next day, I saw that all the bolts had been taken out of the goal and the pieces strewn under the large cedars in the west field near the walking trail. This made me pretty upset as the children were using it. The next time we were playing soccer at Fuller on June 18th, an official from Hazeldale Little League came and told me we could not play soccer in the southwest area nearest the factory. Again, I said there were no trespassing signs posted and I felt I could use the park. He continued to badger me and I told them to call the cops if they wanted us removed. Again, while playing soccer on or about June 25th, an official from Hazeldale Little League approached and was very angry, not wearing a mask, got closer than 6 feet and proceeded to badger, cuss, and raise his voice at me around the four kids playing. Again, I told them to call the cops if they wanted us removed, which he said they did. No officer arrived. I later filed a report with the Clark County Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Office said that I could, or that I should call 311 to document the harassment if it happened again. We have not been back, also stating that they don't know if it was okay for us to play there. I called Parks and Rec to find out what the rules are and have not got a definitive answer, yes or no, if we are able to play at the park. Please advise if I can use my neighborhood park. This is submitted for public comment by Ryan Baker. And I would just believe Eric is on the line. He may have additional information if the board wishes to discuss.
Yeah, Eric, if you can, or whoever is familiar with the situation, if they want to enlighten us a little bit more, that'd be great.
I know somewhere I have a copy of the lease agreement that Bill gave me when I was living over there in Park District 10. And I don't want to speak out of turn on it, but it seems to me that they had an agreement that they could use a field for practice and for their games, but they don't own it. And when it's not in use, that it is available. That was my understanding. And we've always gone over there to play and never had a problem like this.
Yeah. I'll let Eric kind of fill you in on details. We follow up with this individual as well, Leo League. And Barb, to your point, it's facility still owned by HB Fuller. So the county does not actually own this site, and there are multiple agreements and multiple layers to it. Eric, go ahead.
Everybody hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize. I just thought I may have been having a little bit of audio problem. So the property is owned by the HB Fuller Company, and it's leased to Hazeldale Little League. Over the years, it has operated as a de facto park, so that's why the incident like this will happen from time to time where that's not a fenced-in property. We have a bathroom that we've constructed. We constructed a playground, and we've done work on the parking lot and a few other things. Over the years, we've performed maintenance duties. So again, it kind of underlines that it operates as a de facto park, but nevertheless, the property is owned by HB Fuller, and it's leased to Hazeldale Little League. In the incident that is before you, it sounded to me in my conversations with Hazeldale Little League that the group, what is unique in all this is that we're in the middle of course, COVID-19, and there are restrictions on gatherings and group sizes. On a couple of occasions, the group was out there, had groups large, or had a size that was exceeding the limitations that are within the phase reopening plan. And so that was a concern of the league because they are a leaseholder. So they would be concerned that if they were in violation of state regulations or the phased reopening plan, that it could impact their lease. So there were interactions on multiple occasions between the individual and his group and then the league. So that's what I understood to have happened. And there was, both parties did advise that there was law enforcement involved at one point or another. So that's everything that I understood to have occurred between from both sides of the party, or from the event, excuse me.
Okay, so thanks for the clarification. I don't know really what the county or PAB can do if it's gone to this point. So it sounds like this is a multi-layered issue that really doesn't have anything to do with who's able to use the property and what time. It sounds like this escalated from a certain specific issue. Is that what I'm hearing, Eric?
Yes, it seems to me that it is an incident that escalated over time, and 99 times out of 100 groups will go out there and they'll be fine. There'll be no incidents, or if there's an interaction with either HB Fuller or with Hazeldale Little League, the interactions resolve without issue, without us ever being involved.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would just question that we have no voice in this, because I know that the time that I got more involved in it is when we went in and we spent, I think it was about $150,000 to level the soccer fields back there. And I questioned us spending funds on land that we did not own. And that was when Bill gave me the copy of the agreement that we had that does entitle us to use that as a park, and that that was how they were able to justify spending that money. It was the same as we spent some additional funds making the land around Chinook Elementary playable for soccer practice. And we spent our PIF funds on that. But we also got an agreement back that our children could practice soccer there. So seems to me that there is some concern that one of our residents has been told they're not entitled to use a park. And I do understand that HB Fuller is owned by the company, and it has been subsidized by, I think it's the Mariners, is it, that built the ball fields there for us. So it is truly always been seen as a community park. And I believe it's included in our statistics when we look and count acreage. So I don't think it can be both, can it? And so, this is a resident looking for support.
Well, this is also the underlying issue. What I interpret Eric saying is, Hazeldale Little League was uncomfortable because they were breaking the phase two COVID restrictions. They were having way too many people on the fields at that time. So under normal circumstances, Barbara, I'm totally with you for advocating for citizens to be using that space. But I also see Hazeldale Little League saying, we operate the lease on this. We're not supposed to have this many people on the field at this time during this phase we're in the county. So I think it's like it's a layered onion here. I don't think it's the black and white access issue. And so I don't know how much we need to wade into a dispute about COVID gatherings.
Well, I would support you in that, Kelly. I guess that's not what I heard. It sounded like from her message or his message that it was her and her children that were playing and not a large gathering.
So we have a couple of different stories, one certainly from the league and one from the resident. I feel like staff have reached out and done their due diligence to try and unpack this. And Barb, to your point, that certainly is the case for community parks, that they are for everyone's benefit. With that said, I am looking at this agreement and quite a few other agreements, kind of with a much closer eye on things to make sure that we are following the letter of the law. I don't know yet, Barb, if this agreement, the way it's currently written, covers any jurisdiction other than jurisdiction for maintenance purposes. So let me try to unpack it. If you all are interested in additional details, I could update you when I have more. follow-up to offer. I don't want to hijack your meeting with this issue, but we could certainly look into the agreement language and what it actually implies.
Yeah, that would be great, Kalina, and just kind of keeping us posted on sort of that issue, because I'm 100% with Barbara. If just general recreation is being restricted there, we need to maybe look into that. But this sounds like it's maybe a little more complex than that. But yeah, definitely keep us abreast of that situation.
Yeah, perfect.
I am going to move us on though a bit, just because we skipped a public comment. And did we technically cover roll call, Megan, when you had us do our introduction, or would you like us to all just go through it again? I see Jim's on. Can you tell who's on?
If we could do a roll call for the board, that would be great. We are now recording. Previously, we were not.
Okay, so board members.
I can go through the list if that's helpful, and you can say present.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the best way. I was going to make everyone find themselves alphabetically real quick, but that sounds too stressful. So your idea is better. So I'll mute myself.
Kelsey.
Here. Present. Yeah. Tab.
Dave.
I'm here.
Dave.
Here.
Barbara.
Here.
John.
Yo.
Stacy.
Here.
Kale.
Did you hear me?
Oh. Yes. Hi, Stacy. School liaisons, Kale, Nicole,
here,
and Parks Foundation, Dellen.
All right, are we
Dellen,
good now?
We're good, Kelsey. You can proceed. We do need to adopt the minutes from March.
Yes. Okay. So does everyone have a copy, or are you looking, or did you look previously on the emails from Megan about the March minutes?
The March minutes are before you as well.
Oh, thank you.
I'll move to approve the minutes, John Spencer.
Second.
Okay, it's been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? All right, minutes approved. All right, let's get on to Heritage Farm business. Oh, I'm sorry. Remember to submit your volunteer hours. I know we haven't been meeting in person a lot lately, but if you've been doing emails, reading all the things Laura's sending about the PROST plan, I'm sure Dora would appreciate any minutes and hours we're logging, just because we've had that big glut with COVID. For the matching grant purposes. So anytime you're using for parks, make sure to document and send to Dora. Okay, unfinished business. Pat and Galena, is this you?
It's me, this is Pat. Everybody hear me?
Yes, hi Pat.
Hi, I probably show up as L-E-E-P on the screen and I don't have a camera. So you'll just have to listen to my DJ voice instead. Shortly after the master plan for Heritage Farm was adopted, March 10, I believe it was, we hit the COVID crisis. So progress on the business and marketing plan has been slow, but some things have been done. So let me briefly get you updated on what has been done to date, and we are still hoping to get a work session with council whenever we get into phase three to obtain direction from them on a few areas, which I will also review. First, after the master plan was adopted, we organized a core group of many farm, local farm-related business and nonprofit interests to provide advice and suggestions to help build the business and marketing plans and more generally provide input on the utilization of the farm. A contract with Hansen Design was executed to develop 3D concepts for the northeast corner of the farm where the flex space was envisioned in the master plan. That is still ongoing. But in developing those plans, ideas were solicited from the Heritage Farm Advisory Board, Friends of Heritage Farm, Washington State University Extension, and the stakeholder group that I mentioned above. And Hansen Design also reached out to the Clean Water Group here at Public Works to coordinate the concept designs for the northeast corner with the Cougar Creek Restoration Grant awarded to Clean Water by the Department of Ecology. Staff completed a high-level analysis of potential internal revenue ideas, raising lease rates, trying to charge for some of Joe's time to offset general fund expenditures, things of that sort. We also put forth a budget request for the 2021 budget to fund the needed work for the business and marketing plans, including a request for a marketing consultant to assist with the development of that plan. So we prepared a memo to the council requesting that we get the opportunity to have a work session and possibly review the concept designs as they are developed if it comes in advance the ability to do that. Really soliciting their input on the chargers and fees ideas that staff developed, developing a more systematic approach to fees, leases, and payment phasing. Not all the leases are identical. They vary quite a bit. So bringing some consistency may be a desirable direction to go. We requested extension of the project timeline to mid-2021 to complete the business and marketing plan drafts, and requesting, as I mentioned, the budget support to hire a consultant to help with the marketing plan, and also asking council if they had additional stakeholders that they would like to see participate in the core group or in other ways. And that's pretty much where we are today. Happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Pat, this is John. I heard a rumor at least one draft of the proposal that included daycare and other, if I may, oddball contracts.
I think some Hansen Design shared some concepts for that he's working on. I would say some members of the core group maybe did not view those as in the proper perspective that they should have. This was what the contract was for. And, trying to identify concepts that would utilize the flex space idea and try to find ways to generate revenue. I think we've been very open. Galena especially has had endless communications with the groups and have been very transparent of what we're trying to do. And I think that until we actually have concepts, get council direction on the concepts, and then really begin to engage kind of the rest of the business and marketing plan aspect, which is much beyond just the northeast corner of the farm. It's pretty difficult to move further on with the business marketing plans.
John, really briefly, we haven't met with the group for quite some time. Honestly, we just don't have the capacity right now. And I'll talk about COVID-19 issues later. We do plan to meet with them again before the council work session. There was a meeting which David, the consultant, was talking very high level, yes, and he shared some high traffic opportunities, things that generate a lot of visits to a site. And in that conversation, he had mentioned that daycares or child centers or things of that nature could generate a lot of visits to the facility and could also lead to a potential implementation of some child care educational model at the facility. So I wouldn't say it was a brouhaha, as you put it. You know, I think it was just an idea. It wasn't super well received, but like Pat said, we continue to kind of keep the conversation going. At the moment, however, we just haven't had time to really follow up or do any additional work. The work session will need to be in person because the renderings will be 3D. So we're not even sure when that could happen. You know, at this point, let's say it happens in September, we'll meet with the core group, or we plan to meet with the core group before that meeting to get them back in the loop. So that's kind of where things are from my perspective.
Okay.
Any other questions, comments about Heritage Farm before we move on? Okay, I'm sure Galena will keep us posted. Pat, you're up again with Conservation Futures.
Okay, well, about the same time as the council was adopting the master plan, I was trying to finish up the update of the Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan. Like the Comprehensive Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, that document is helps us with eligibility for certain grant programs through the state, and the documents have to be updated every 6 years to maintain grant eligibility. And we last updated the Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan in 2014. So it was time, and we actually had all the materials prepared and forwarded to council for a May 6th work session. And then again, the COVID situation struck and the work session was canceled. So we have not had the opportunity to review that with council. We again would hope to do that at work session at some point. In the meantime, we did send a memo to them just briefly outlining what's in it, and you know, kind of repeat some of those thoughts right now. Program priorities included in the update include completing the Conservation Futures bond projects, reallocating bond revenues to new projects as two projects have been withdrawn, developing a new list of potential projects in the plan to guide acquisition over the next several years. Had the work session been held, we would have requested council refer the draft Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan to the Parks Advisory Board for review and prioritization of short and longer term project opportunities and development of recommendations for council. I think that is still all our desire when we have the opportunity to talk with council, and we will request the same process. And to quickly update you on the status of the projects, City of Vancouver acquired the 45-acre Fulton property for a future community park. The City of Camas has acquired 81 acres on the northeast shoreline of Lacamas Lake. So that project is basically complete, the Lacamas Lake North project. Council's approved purchase and sale agreements for 48 acres on the East Fork Lewis River and Mason Creek vicinity, and the salmon habitat restoration design is underway. The Lewis River Ranch acquisition proposal, we are looking at expansion from 160 acres to 225 acres, and appraisers are under contract to complete valuation by the end of August. The two projects that were withdrawn are the Washougal River Greenway connection between Hathaway and Schmidt Family Parks in Washougal and the Rock Creek Forest conservation easement in the Dole Valley area. That freed up $1,350,000 to be allocated to new projects. Extensions of time to complete the East Fork Lewis River Optimus and Yockold Burn Forest projects have been granted, with completion dates set for February 22, 2022. Regarding Yockold, the Columbia Land Trust proposed matching federal forest legacy funds of $3,250,000 with the million that we allocated for that project. Thus far, they have secured 2 million of that 3.25 million that they are seeking. And they have a second forest legacy grant application that ranked first in the state of Washington and is now moved into the nationwide evaluation round. Of course, it's all dependent on what the federal budget plays out like as we reach the next fiscal year. The city of La Center has also proposed an extension of time for the Bowling Tree Trail Corridor. I believe council will consider that next week. And the Farm Preservation and Lake River Water Trail projects are still in the screening stage. The updated Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan identifies 20 new projects that, as I said, we would like the opportunity to review those with you and get your prior sense of priorities with those and make recommendations back to the board. So that is where we stand on the Conservation Areas Acquisition Plan and the Conservation Futures Bond projects. Happy to take questions.
Pat, with the 1.3, I think you said, that we have unallocated at this point, when do we go about looking at new plans for that?
That's dependent on us getting direction from council. I think the list of 20 projects is identified in the plan,
right?
But we have not had the opportunity to get any input from council on whether, you know, they would be supportive of all 20 or they have some additional projects they'd like us to investigate. So we really, until we can get a time to sit down with council, it's pretty hard to predict when we will be able to review okay. those.
Right. Okay.
Anyone else for Pat? Going once, going twice. You're free, Pat.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day. You're welcome.
You too. Bye.
Okay, Eric, fee collection update.
Collections, our operations were essentially halted in mid-March at all locations with the exception of online pass sales, and they had been halted, again, with the exception of online pass sales until Friday, June 19, when we were able to reopen. So we were unfortunately had missed April and May, and May is certainly one of our prime months for operation. When we reopened in June 19, we opened all four fee booths. So Vancouver Lake, Frenchman's Bar, Salmon Creek on the Klein Line side, and then Louisville, we opened all four fee booths from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., which is a little unique because typically we would be open from 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. or later. But due to the cancellation of all picnic shelters and park use permits, we've kept a different schedule. As far as our gross sales are concerned, we've processed about a little over $172,000 in parking fees at both the fee booths and the parking meters. As far as annual pass sales are concerned, we've sold right around 3,200, which is pretty good considering that not only were the fee booths closed, but we weren't able to sell passes at the Public Service Center downtown, at the 78th Street Operations Center, and also at the Battleground Community Center. So all those places are still closed, and we're not really selling any passes from there. So the online option has proved to be quite valuable and useful. It's kind of kept us afloat, at least in terms of the pass sales there. And relative to 2019, we sold about 4,500 parking passes last year. So that kind of gives you an idea of where we are relative to last year. Parking pass sales will start to slow down in July, so I wouldn't expect our number to increase too dramatically. So I would imagine we will end up in the 3,500 to maybe 3,700 range in terms of pass sales for 2020. And then as far as gross sales are concerned relative to 2019, at the fee booths and the parking meters, we're down about $112,000 over last year. Last year we had gross sales of about $285,000. So I can leave it at that, and I can certainly take or answer any questions you might have at this point.
Eric, this is Dave. I have a question for you. I went to Climbline, I think it was on the 3rd of July, and the booth was closed, and I went to pay at the kiosk, and it said not accepting bills or something like that. Use credit card or coins. Is that normal?
No. The fee booth, the one staff person that we have operating the fee booth had some health-related issues that kept her from coming in. She's fine, and it's just she was unable to come in for a few days, so we don't have enough staff this year to backfill, so we're running a pretty lean ship on that front. Parking meter has a couple of sensors that are essentially out of it that are prohibiting us from collecting cash, so we're able to turn off the cash collection feature and just allow it to exclusively collect either coin or card, or folks can use the mobile app if they're so inclined.
Okay, so the standard is no bills then?
No, the standard is all four parks, each machine will accept cash.
Okay.
We're waiting for, it basically needs to be repaired, and we're waiting for some parts to come in.
Okay.
Eric, I have a question. Can you tell how many people have or are using the app to pay?
Yes.
Is it exciting or not so hot?
Relative to credit cards and cash, it's not so hot, but it's steadily improving. Thus far, we've processed about $2,500, and most of it, if not all of it, has been this year on the mobile app, and that translates to about almost 750 transactions. So is it a big number? No, but we're working on getting some more signage out and getting and trying to encourage more people to use it more and more.
Does it take fees from parks? Like, do we pay percentage?
So it charges the customer a 35-cent transaction fee, which we collect, but then we return that to the company that provides the mobile app as part of their service fee, and then we keep the base $3 fee.
Okay. That's good to know. Any other questions for Eric before we move on? I hate to rush us. I know we have so much to talk about, and it's already 4:40. I think we're definitely going over 5. So hang if you can. But any other questions for Eric? Okay, then we're going to move on to Laura and Steve and our post plan update. And if you haven't checked your email this afternoon, Laura did send an email kind of specifically geared towards this discussion. So you may want to also look at that while they're talking. All right, I'll turn it over to Laura.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. We've had some really great responses to our survey already. I'm not going to steal the thunder. I'm just going to hand it over to our amazing consultant, Steve Dew. Steve, you're on.
Thanks, Laura. Good afternoon, members of the PAB. Can everybody hear me? Just real quick sound check, some nods. Okay, great.
You sound a little far away.
I'll do what I can, Barbara.
Okay, thanks.
So Kelsey mentioned an email that went out a little earlier. Basically, it just gave a couple of bullet points as to what I wanted to spend a little bit of time with you all today on with the PROS plan update. So I want to use a little bit of time to just offer an update as to where we are in the project, but use the balance of my time to get feedback from you, since this is the first time that I'm actually interacting with you since we started the project because of the pandemic. So it's an unfortunate reality that we're living through, and we're on our end being as adaptive as we can for the process. So in terms of just quick reference on some of the moving pieces for the project, one item is a work in progress public involvement plan that Laura has on screen. And I believe you've also been provided a copy of this, but basically the public involvement plan is the roadmap for how we intend to engage the community through the course of the project. So as part of the public involvement plan, it talks about some goals and objectives for public outreach. It highlights some key messages that we can use either for the website or promotional material or as we talk about the PROS plan. But really the heart of it is the steps and the steps we'll take to engage the community and the tactics that we'll use to hear from folks. So the public involvement plan as it's currently drafted steps us through a variety of different ways in which we'll try to reach out to folks. And there's a set of tables in there on page 4 and 5. And there's interest in scrolling down to that. It's there. Basically, it, again, just outlines the steps we'll take. So in terms of where we are today, we've got step number one, the public involvement plan, prepped. And certainly in, again, a working draft format. So as you review it, please feel free to offer any comments or suggestions on how to make it a little stronger. Each major task does have roles for my team, Conservation Techniques team, the CT role, as well as the Clark County role, the CC role. So for each task, it tries to give some guidance as to who's doing what and in what time frame. So because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the timeline for public involvement obviously has been impacted, but we are moving forward on a number of pieces. So as far as informational materials, the county's prepped the website, and there's a video that's available that talks about what the PROS plan is and why it's relevant. In terms of outreach and notifications, we'll be using email blasts and outreach through other organizations to promote the project, to encourage folks to take the online survey, and the like. So it's definitely a coordinated effort to make this public process come to. Another major piece is, scroll down to the next page, the pop-up activities, which, as a reminder, we were intending to do a series of pop-up events or mobile events at farmers markets or community gatherings throughout the summer. And I will take direction from Galena as to when we safely can do that stuff, but we will be prepared to engage the community in that manner. If we need to evolve this plan to be more online, I'm certainly open to that. But in terms of current structure, we're still hopeful that we can do the pop-up meetings and then later in the fall, a public workshop that would likely take place sometime in September or October. Another big piece to the outreach is that we've got a series of stakeholder discussions. So that includes two group-based sessions as well as some six individual one-on-one conversations. The two group sessions have already occurred and notes have been put together on those. So one session was with sport groups and that had about 12 to 13 participants. And then a second group session was with trail advocates and that had about 14 folks involved. And it was conducted remotely like this meeting is today. So we got good feedback from folks and we're looking to wrap up the one-on-one stakeholder conversations later this month. So really that kind of hits on the main pieces of the public involvement plan. And again, obviously there's points at which during the process we'll touch base with the PAB and ultimately with the county council to review where we are, share what we've learned from the community and where we might go with recommendations for the plan and ultimately with plan adoption. But again, this is just a document to help guide how we move through the process. So if you do have feedback on that, please pass it along to Laura and she'll get it to me and we'll keep moving forward and keep it fresh. Another thing I'd like to reference, and I'm not sure who's controlling the visuals, if it's Laura or
Steve, can I interrupt you for a quick second?
Please.
So are you doing other similar projects right now elsewhere? What's the public involvement been like? Do we have any idea what a reasonable goal is right now as far as outreach?
Yeah, that's a good question, John. And we are working on multiple projects concurrently, and we are seeing obviously the same issues across all of our projects right now. So one thing is that the county has the online survey active right now. And I know Laura didn't want to spill the beans, but we have 1,450 responses to date. So last time we did this plan, we had about 1,500 responses on the survey. So we're already tracking with where we were as we completed the plan last time. So through a little more promotion, through a little longer time to leave it out there, we'll certainly exceed what we got last time on just the survey. So that's great baseline data. As far as the other elements of outreach, our other projects really are moving more toward online engagement for obvious reasons. So, you know, it's definitely tricky to do some of the things we want to do online, but there are tools out there that enable us to pose questions, get responses, offer maps for people to drop pins on and that sort of thing. So the tools are there and we're using that in some other projects. So I think depending on how the disease progresses and what restrictions we have to deal with, we might need to reassess a little bit. So I'll just leave it at that for now.
That's fair. Awesome.
Yeah. Any other questions on the public process piece? Okay, then I'll shift gears a little because I know you guys have a tight agenda. There's also a project schedule that was put in the email that Laura sent out. This is just an FYI at this stage. Again, it lines up and is in sync with the public involvement plan that I just walked through and gives you a quick snapshot as to how we think we'll be moving through the project. We put this together probably 2 months ago at this point. So again, the bottom half is the public process pieces and just basically shift those to the right about 2 months to kind of line things up with where we actually are. I don't think that the COVID delay in process is gonna affect us at the end of the day when we're in the position of putting the plan together. It's just compressing the timeline a little bit. And This is just, again, for reference, and if you have questions, again, let Laura know, and we can work with you directly on that. But the other thing I wanted to just reference is what we've talked, what we've started working on in the PROS plan update. As this timeline suggests, it's a fairly linear process, but because of COVID, we're approaching the plan from every direction we can. To keep working on different elements, and we'll insert public feedback and direction as we can as we move through the process. So I already referenced the survey and the stakeholder discussions and some of the public informational pieces, but we've also initiated a review of the park system inventory. We've started a look at the park maintenance standards and the levels of service and the classifications. So we're diving into different elements of the plan, and we're also updating and reviewing the old appendices from the 2015 plan, things that deal with funding and financing tools and tactics, and past plan summaries. So again, we're approaching the plan development from every angle and just trying to stay busy and pull together the pieces as we can. So with the balance of my time, I just want to ask a couple questions of you to get some feedback. Again, this is the first time I'm getting a chance to chat with you since the project started. And I know from both the kickoff meeting and from conversations with staff that there are certain core issues or policies that we will be looking into as far as this plan update goes. Those include looking at parkland classifications to address linear parks and pocket parks and school sites and developer-based projects, looking at options for how to accommodate developer-built parks and how that relates to possible TIF credits, as well as looking at innovative park design or inclusive park design. So those are some of the things we've heard, and I guess one core question I've got for you is, what other issues or policies do you think we need to be paying attention to at this point that will impact how we develop the PROS plan?
So I feel like I'm talking a lot, but I'll go ahead and jump in. Two items. First, the PROS plan doesn't go, if I remember correctly, that deep into strategy here. But given the recession, we're likely to see more opportunities to buy parks, to buy land at less cost than we might otherwise have. And I'm wondering whether we should strategize that way. I know that that's an awfully big discussion item to throw into this meeting. So I just throw it out there, and maybe that's something people can respond to later. And the other one is also a big discussion, but Black Lives Matter and equity issues are hot right now. And despite some controversy over it, I do believe there is systemic racism in all aspects of society, including the county. And it may be worth throwing something in there to discuss how we can work to improve that issue. That's what I've got for the moment.
I could jump in on a couple of things. One, John, we certainly always look for opportunities to expand and invest. I think right now we also have to balance it with whether or not we could maintain it. And one issue we keep running into with properties, we am going to use quotes banked, is that while they may not require full-on developed park standard of maintenance, they do require maintenance, right? Maybe a fence, maybe a fallen tree, a landscaping, just to make sure there's no risk to fire risk, excuse me, et cetera. So we are mindful of all of that when we kind of look at things of that nature. And then regarding your point on Black Lives Matter, so one of the things that we're really trying to infuse throughout all of our work is an equity lens and for our capital program specifically, which will be part of our TIP equivalent matrix once we develop that, would be an actual equity score criteria that would help us make investments short and long term in not only acquisitions, but also development. So those are just some things that we're working on, and we could loop you in and update you later if you're interested.
Love to hear more.
Other board members have comments or thoughts about core issues or policies that we haven't already talked about?
I actually do. I just have a question, and I'm not sure if how this applies to the PROS plan, but this is my first PROS plan that I've gone through. So, but I'm just kind of wondering about the maintenance issues and maybe low maintenance design as far as our parks go. You know, low maintenance, irrigation, those types of things. I'm just wondering if those sorts of things can be written into the PROS plan at all.
Comments? We could certainly look at that, and I'd work with Laura and Galena on that.
That's all I had.
And just as a heads up, too, it's part of our discussion, even with current projects, not just long-term. So we are being mindful of what can we afford in terms of maintenance. And it's a smart thing to do just because, right? Just because it helps to be more sustainable. But also as we look at current projects, we are having those conversations.
Thank you.
Any other comments on core issues or different question about priorities for the next 5 to 6 years? Again, knowing that the PROS plan is a 6-year plan.
So this is Jay Chester, and I'm sorry, I'm having real trouble making the connection, so hopefully you guys can hear me. Somewhere in the PROS plan, we need to introduce the ability for us to team up with developers and provide some kind of mechanism or guidelines for developing parks in conjunction with development. And another aspect of that is the definition of getting smaller parks or defining smaller parks. Obviously, pocket parks are a huge buzzword, if you will, for right now. So to me, that needs to be in the core or the framework of the PROS plan in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, thanks for that comment. And I do recall that from past conversations. So we'll be looking at that as part of the classifications as well as the inventory and the policy side too.
This is Kelsey, just to echo on what Jay said. For myself, that is my number one thing, that we have the mechanisms in place in this PROS plan to work through all the code issues to create those relationships with developers. I mean, we spent, what, guys, 3 or 4 meetings with developers coming to us, showing us plans for parks that they wanted to build and receive PIF credits for. And again, if it meets a standard that's acceptable, there's no reason we should say no to that. And just not having the correct codes and language in place is not an excuse to stop that. If we don't let them build these developments with parks in them, we're going to be chasing our tails trying to keep up to build parks, neighborhood parks for the community. So if developers have the resources to do it now and they just want PIF credits for it, and we've got to still work through the mechanisms of the promised MPD parks. That's still my number one priority, is the parks we've already promised to people who haven't had them built, but we've got to figure out a way to balance them and work through these PIF credit issues. So that's number one for me. The equity stuff John was discussing, that's really important to me. In our kickoff meeting, I was arguing to keep track of or have respondents have the option to provide their race, because I really am interested in the correlation based on race, if we're getting different responses based on the color of your skin, if you feel like your park's well maintained, if you feel like it's easy for you and your family to get a park. I'm interested in the outcome of the survey there. And then the low maintenance stuff Stacy talked about, and we've talked about that just in general park design. How do we make parks cheaper and easier to maintain? We need to start maybe moving away from just 4 acres of irrigated lawn. I mean, it's pretty and it's nice, but is it worth the maintenance cost? I don't know. So that's the other thing. And then I also had a question for you, Steve, and or Laura. When you were discussing the one-on-one stakeholders, I remember seeing a previous email with the list, but I really feel like it will be beneficial to include DEEB in that group we're doing outreach with, especially because I know our board, I mean, it's on the list of things we all said is a priority as a group, but I just want to make sure, again, we didn't kumbaya all of our issues with them and things that they would like to see, but I want them to be in the loop of things we're discussing. I don't want them to feel blindsided by things that won't be in the PROS plan or will be in the PROS plan, because there were some accusations of that previously in the first PROS plan from that group. So that's all I'll say.
I just wanted to jump in and say that I agree 100% that we can't miss opportunities, and that we really need to press forward to create those. And if we include DEEB as part of our solution, it'll be a shared vision and we'll be more successful. So I think you're right on there, Kelsey. And I too, John, want to get right behind you on that. We really need to look at the equity and make sure that our parks, you know, I've advocated so many times over that it seems like our poorer neighborhoods seem to get cheated when it comes to the ability of residents to chip in and donate. I live in Phillida, so I'm going to throw a rock at us and say we've got some of the best parks because the fundraising ability is greater. But there is such a disparity in what's available for children because of income levels. And we need to do what we can to smooth that out, and it needs to be a priority. So leveraging builders, yeah, that's going to work great in more affluent neighborhoods, but that's still going to leave our other neighborhoods in a greater need. So we can't leave that out of the picture. That's all I got.
Thanks, Barbara. And Kelsey, just back to your comment about the one-on-one stakeholder sessions, those have not been finalized yet in terms of that list. So I'll work with Laura to make sure that it includes DEEB. So if the board has other suggestions on specific individuals we should include in that list, again, coordinate with Laura. But I'm looking at the clock and I see that we are a little over. So respectfully, I'll not ask my last question, but I'll turn it back to Laura or Kelsey.
I'm not on the email of what your last question is. Why don't you just ask it? So, because I like having all of my, you know, I's dotted.
Fair enough. Basically, the question was, imagine Clark County in 2030. So knowing that we've got a PROS plan that goes out 6 years, but let's go a little further in time than that. What do you see, or what do you want to see happen in terms of active park space, in terms of natural areas and open space, in terms of trail connections, or in terms of partnerships and collaborations? I'm guessing we've talked through some of this already, but if there's anything else that's new to add to the list, I'm curious to hear that.
Dave, I think you should talk. Do you have anything, Dave, to add?
No, not at this point.
Dave, you're like the Wolf of Wall Street at that table.
I know.
Okay, does anyone else want to chime in then? I think Steve, to a certain extent, you have the document that we kind of did break this down somewhat. I mean, I think, I don't want to speak for the group as a whole, but a lot of our discussions have centered around, like you said, linear parks, changing the framework of what is considered a park potentially in Clark County. All of our parks are very cookie cutter, neighborhood parks, community parks, regional parks. So maybe thinking outside the box a bit more to include those linear parks, those pocket parks, trail connections, I think are a huge priority for this group, getting people safely to parks. And again, I also want to hammer on when we're the inclusive component of parks, that our parks fail a lot in terms of equity. I know we've been talking about race and income, but we're also not doing well on inclusivity for adults and children who want to access our parks. So I think that's a priority as well.
If I can also jump on this one, my biggest concern when I look out long distance, like 2030, is that development is going to residential development is going to outpace park development. And specifically, it's from my perspective, it does us no good to have inclusive parks if we've spent all of our money making those inclusive spaces and we haven't bought additional space to serve all these new people coming in. So definitely, I think we need to really focus in on how are we going to work with DEEB, with the private sector, to get parks developed along with the residential development. And anything we can do to get our hands on land before it's gone is my big concern in the long range.
Thanks. All right, anyone else for now? I mean, we're going to be talking a lot more about the post plan coming up, but anything else Steve needs to know tonight, right now? Going once. Twice. Steve, you're free. Thank you for your time and your work. All right. Galena, you're up with, I'm sure, a bunch of good news with letter A here.
So, time check. How's everyone doing? Can you go a little over?
I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay.
I need to be somewhere at 5:30, so yeah. I'm going to have to sign off about 5:20.
Okay. I also need to let a staff member go home, or I'm going to be looking at additional costs, right? Wink, wink. So I want to start by saying, first of all, how much we missed you. This is so refreshing. I'm sitting here just giggling. I'm so excited. We're at least in this environment able to have a conversation and check in and run ideas by each other. It's missed, very much missed. You know, parks are all about community and public process. So having you back, even with this clunky technology, is very much appreciated. I also want to add a minor add to our discussion related to Heritage Farm, just to echo what I think Pat was trying to say was the core group. They've been so instrumental in helping our staff and the consultant understand the dynamics and the history of the farm that I didn't want sort of our discussion about ideas that may or may not be well received kind of taint that involvement. They are incredible. Like Pat said, I talked to some of them when we were engaging in meetings daily. It's a great group with a lot of energy. So I just want to put that out there. What I want to do is very quickly run through a few things. I don't have a big report on any of the items you see under manager's report, but these things keep coming up and I feel it's important that you're in the loop, at least that it's on your radar. And I'll start with a brief summary of COVID-19 impacts. You've already heard what Eric shared about our situation with revenues. As you know, during this entire outbreak, our parks remained open. We've also opened our restrooms a few weeks back. The playgrounds remain closed. That's largely due based on guidance from public health and stringent requirements around cleaning. And we simply don't have the capacity to clean up every playground at the degree that is recommended. We hope to be able to reopen our playgrounds as soon as possible. Right now, we're talking to public health and looking at phase three. I don't know if you knew this or not, but the playgrounds typically receive 2 pressure washings per year. That is the extent of a typical cleanup of a playground. And it is best under current pandemic conditions that we get to them much more frequently. I think I've mentioned to you already that all of our non-essential spending has been stopped. That includes equipment parts, supplies, non-emergency services. It includes decreases in our seasonal capacity. And as you already know, parks are very seasonal in nature. There's definitely a need for that. Added both worker capacity, and we've done it through temporary employees, and just the spending alone, it goes exponentially up for us when we start getting into warmer months. And really, I would say starting in March and normally through October, parks see quite a bit of an increase in park goers, and just straight up maintenance increases significantly. To put all of this in perspective, we are also spending about $20,000 to $30,000 per month just on COVID-19 related expenses. For example, we are cleaning our restrooms every day, some restrooms more frequently. We increased our capacity to clean up portable restrooms to every day. We empty them more frequently than we've ever done before. So the work that we're doing is a bit different. It certainly is impacted by the both sanitation requirements and just in response to the pandemic that we continue to experience. We've added more signage in parks, encouraging people to socially distance and things of that nature. And almost daily, we respond to multiple inquiries from folks who are either calling to check if parks are open or they're submitting a complaint. The number of reports that we get from the community is significantly higher. I think my staff were saying that coming into the office last week, normally we'd have a couple of temporary employees here helping with phones. Our one call taker right now had 140 voice messages from just one weekend, and that wasn't the 4th of July. It was just your average, kind of a warmer weather weekend. So that's kind of where we are right now. We're definitely impacted, but we'll remain hopeful. And our staff are, I tell you, they're superstars and their heart is in the right place. They care about parks. They care about facilities. I also get quite frequently emails with pictures of parks, people saying thank you for keeping things going and making parks look as beautiful as they are. On vegetation management, I believe Kevin was still on the phone and we could always give you an update on his body of work, but very similar experiences. We had to cut back on non-mandated services. We're focusing on the worst of the worst. Kevin's total capacity of staff was reduced by about 40 to 50%. And that's largely, again, because we rely so heavily on temporary and seasonal capacity. So everyone is doing as much as they can, working as fast as they can. And probably one of the sort of the heartwarming things for me is that they remain in good spirits and they are really proud of their work. So that's kind of a very, very high level, just so you kind of know where we are. I don't know if Eric mentioned or not, I must not have heard him, but our revenues have decreased by about 60%. A little bit more on, not a little bit more, significantly gone on the reservation side because we're not doing any reservations, we're not doing any permits. So we're essentially are collecting parking fees at this point on a part-time basis, peak load days and hot days and weekends is our plan for right now. And the few sales of our parking passes are bringing in some revenue. So long term, I also will be looking at our parks budget on the general side of it to see if we could gain even more savings for 2021. Right now, our target is 8%. That's about $300,000 for the Parks and Lands division. we may not need to take any cuts, but the scenario that we're putting together has to be at that level. So to kind of put it in perspective, $300,000, that's about 4 maintenance positions. Our goal is to make cuts in controllables, which essentially are supplies and services, and keep all of our positions whole. So keep your fingers crossed for us. Our staff and our constituents remain to be our priority, but we still have to look at things holistically, strategically, and look at things that we could potentially change, including how we do business, which kind of goes to what we discussed earlier. Everything, we're looking at everything. How often do we irrigate? Do we use municipal water or do we use well water? How much is it costing us? How much are we paying for different types of services? So we're looking at everything with an open mind. We also have a new finance manager who's just been a breath of fresh air. She's bringing a lot of experience with her and is very strategic and is finding opportunities for us to be more sustainable. So long term, I'll keep talking to you. I'm still hopeful that when we're able to start having in-person meetings, that we would form some sort of an alternative funding task force, some forum, some group with PAB involvement that could help us look at budget strategies for our park system beyond today, beyond this year, beyond 2 years, because you all know that on our MPD budget side, we're also looking at some significant challenges in the next few years. So that's kind of where we are. I know you probably have lots of questions. I see chat, but I haven't been able to read it. So I'll read it as soon as I kind of run a few things. So on Camp Bonneville, just a quick update. We just completed an audit with the state, just doing some wrap up work. The cleanup is still scheduled to be completed this fall. Weston continued to clean up the site and things look to be on target. We should be completed here within the next few weeks. I think they're largely done, just wrapping up some administrative work with my team. And we're also asking for time with council, either in council time or work session, to discuss Camp Bonneville cleanup update and also start having conversations about the master planning process for the regional park. I don't know if I mentioned this already or not. I might have emailed this to you, but because we haven't been able to have meetings with council for quite some time, all of our new projects and all of our major maintenance projects are all on hold. I think I promised you a Whipple Creek and Harmony Park project update. So Whipple Creek, some of you know that there was an article in the newspaper about the park and the new developments going into that area and how that impacts Whipple Creek. So we're still looking for ideas and solutions and talking to our partners. Rotary had recently reached out to us. They want to do a project with us. So we're kind of running the idea of partnering at this location with them. We don't have a firm commitment yet or any plans, just a very early discussion on how we could engage additional community investments in this area. And then lastly, I know I'm going fast, but I want to be sensitive to your time. Harmony Park project. I think some of you already know that the city has plans to build Northeast 13th Street, which would slice that park in half and would lead to loss in available acreage. We've been meeting with Harmony Sports Association and Timbers and other folks involved to figure out a plan that could provide for some solutions, either a land swap where we would move the facility all north of Northeast 13th, or maybe status quo if the city doesn't have plans to build the street now. So we are having a lot of discussions. Some of these discussions are looking at our old leases, looking at our commitments, trying to figure out what can be done. But our options are very limited if and when the city, not if, when the city puts the street through the park. We need to look for solutions now. So we are meeting with our stakeholders and having difficult conversations about what we can do and how we could make the facility as whole as it can be. So that's kind of all I have. There's quite a bit of other stuff on our plate that I'm not gonna get into too much into the weeds. Do you have any questions for me? And also, if you want more information on any of this, we could certainly add it to our next meeting's agenda.
Anyone going once, twice, three times?
Just know you've got we've got your back, and we want good stuff for you in this group.
We know. I try not to be, I try to keep it light, but it's been here for everyone.
Okay, roundtable discussion. Really briefly, does anyone want to share how horrible 2020 has been, or we're good? Okay, well, we had our one public comment.
Mama always said, if you can't say something nice, don't say it. So that's quite silent.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we'll adjourn then, and we'll be in touch with our next meeting. I think probably we need to make it at least an hour and a half. So then if we run over more, our meetings are usually 2.5 hours, and I think cramming this into an hour was a little too ambitious. So we'll make those adjustments and see you guys hopefully in a month on a small screen. So everyone stay safe, stay healthy. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.